Hello, and welcome to the History of the Early Church. Episode 28, Origins, Legacy. Origen's book, Contra Celsum, is probably his most famous work after On First Principles and the Hexapla. In it, we can see how a mind like Origen would respond to the arguments of an educated pagan. Since Contra Celsum is quite long, what follows will merely be a sample of Origen's defense of the Christian Church. The major criticisms of Celsus we discussed in episode 17 fell into four categories: Christianity's relationship to Roman society, the novelty and unoriginality of Christianity, the character of Jesus and his apostles, and specific Christian doctrines and practices. In defending the faith, Origen drew upon arguments from earlier Christian authors, Greek philosophical schools like the Stoics, and his own thought. It was common for educated pagans like Celsus to assert that all the deities of various nations were under the umbrella of the one supreme God. By worshipping their local deities, each people gave worship indirectly to the supreme God. Because of the uncertainties in religion and philosophy, with all their competing claims, the most mature and reasonable path to follow was one's ancestral traditions. These could be mixed with other traditions and philosophies, but they should never be abandoned. This was, in essence, the heart of pagan conservatism, what Celsus called the true doctrine. There are so many religions and belief systems, no one path can claim exclusivity to the whole truth. Hence, everyone should continue the customs passed down to them, and in this way, everyone acknowledges the highest God. Christianity rejected all this. There was a supreme God, yes, but all other belief systems were, at best, incomplete, and at worst, downright false. Christian truth meant turning away from those ancestral traditions, something highly antisocial and threatening to Greco-Roman society. Origen defended the Christian position by pointing out not all of the ancestral traditions hallowed by Celsus were good. Barbarians who perform human sacrifice, for instance. He also asserted that the worship of demons was always evil. In the classical world, demons, or daimones, was a generic term for spiritual beings, but in Christian thought it meant only wicked spirits. Yes, there were lesser spiritual beings serving the high God, but these were his angels, who always directed humans to worship God and not themselves. The demons, on the other hand, enslaved their followers to their names and rituals. Worshipping idols was clearly a folly, inanimate objects made by men ensnared by demons. How could an educated philosopher like Celsus not see that? This was, for Origen, a major failing of pagan philosophy. It acknowledged, on some level, the silliness of worshipping idols, but had no real way of turning people away from it. Though Celsus ridiculed the worship of Christians, Origen countered, saying Christian worship was the only truly spiritual worship, with no need for idols or temples, simply the mind of the believer toward the high God. Indeed, Christianity had brought more people into directly worshiping the high God than philosophy ever did or could. Philosophy was for elite men. Christianity was for everyone, male, female, rich, poor, young, old, barbarian, and Roman. This leads to another area of Celsus's criticism of Christianity. Despite its claims to be an intellectually respectable religion, Christianity actively encouraged the proselytization of non-elites. Celsus portrayed Christian evangelism as a kind of empty promise-making, preying on women and children and promising them eternal life if they rejected the ancestral traditions of their fathers. Origen gave no defense against this. Rather, he embraced it. Christianity had brought the ideals so beloved in Greek philosophy to all peoples. In other words, Christians were better at teaching philosophy than philosophers. The church, by actively reaching out to women and non-elites, was able to do something Celsus and his ilk could never do: transform the lives of ordinary people with the virtues of philosophy. Nevertheless, Origen could not completely deflect the charge that many lay Christians were simple-minded, abandoned reason, often accepted doctrine on blind faith, and believed in an angry sky god who bore little resemblance to the rational deity of Plato. But for Origen, these people did not represent true Christianity. One of Origen's most common criticisms of Celsus was that he did not understand what true Christianity was. And when I say true Christianity, I mean Origen's version of Christianity. In many ways, Origen acknowledged that Celsus's portrayal of Christians was accurate, but that was because such people were the simple lay folk. Yes, they may have been the majority in the church, but had Celsus truly desired to understand Christianity, he should have consulted someone educated and versed in philosophy. Someone like Origen. Origen's deflection of criticism in this way almost looks as though he fell into the no true Scotsman fallacy. But on the other hand, I think we can agree that if one wishes to critique a belief system, one should seek out the best and brightest of its adherents. However, the picture Origen paints of himself as the representative of educated Christians could hardly be complete. Origen's unique ideas, such as the preexistence of souls or allegorical exegesis, were not shared by all his peers. There were many other highly intelligent Christians in the empire who disagreed with Origen's positions. Celsus is charged that Christians were dangerous because of their refusal to serve the emperor in military and government was answered by Origen in a way that would not have changed Celsus's mind. Origen believed Christians should not participate in either the Roman government or military. But, he claimed, the prayers of Christians to God offered the emperor more protection and service than did his legions. And if all the world, both Roman and barbarian, became Christian, there would be no need to fight, because the world would be at peace. It's easy to see why Celsus would not have found this answer convincing. Beyond military and government service, Christians appeared to completely reject participation in public life. Much of this was due to the fact that pagan sacrifice, idolatry, was integrated into almost every aspect of public life, something which amounted to apostasy for Christians. For Celsus, though, the church was like a society within society, secret and subversive. Like Tertullian and the Apologists, Origen consistently asserted that Christians were the most moral, law-abiding citizens of the empire. The church was, in a way, its own society, but its relationship to the Roman Empire was mutually beneficial, not parasitic. Celsus had asserted Jesus was not a miracle worker, but a charlatan of low birth, a sorcerer who used magic to deceive people. Origen easily countered this by pointing out how Jesus' miracles called people to virtue and goodness. Sorcerers never did that. They only performed tricks for personal gain. Jesus also acted in a humble and meek manner, not a theatrical self-promoter. Finally, had Jesus been a fraud, he would not have been willing to die on the cross. And the same goes for his disciples. Had they not truly believed that they had seen their master risen from the dead, they would not have been willing to be martyred. In addition, Jesus' low birth, and that of many of his disciples, only added to their credibility, not the other way around. For how could someone of humble origins teach such wisdom and inspire so much good if they were not truly inspired by God? Celsus had also attacked the historical reliability of the gospel accounts, claiming they were based on hearsay. For instance, Jesus' resurrection was dismissed as an invention based off older invented stories, where a hero simply disappeared and then reappeared, claiming they had been to Hades and returned alive again. Origen countered this by noting how Jesus' death was a public execution carried out in front of thousands of Judeans. Had his death occurred in secret, then the story of his resurrection could have easily been fabricated. But Jesus clearly died and was buried. His death was beyond dispute. He could not have hidden underground in a secret cave and then reappeared. The recentness of Christianity, the fact that the church was only about 2 centuries old, made it less credible in the eyes of men like Celsus. He could appreciate religions which had great antiquity, the ancestral traditions of nations. Even Judaism, for all Celsus's criticism of it, was an established ancient religion. Christianity was a new sect claiming to be a continuation of Judaism, but in fact, Christians did not follow the Jewish law or live in a Jewish manner. They did not even honor the ancestral traditions of their parent religion. Hence, any assertion of antiquity by Christians by way of the Old Testament was rejected by Celsus. In doing so, he touched a key area, Christianity's relationship to Judaism. If such a link could be shown to be false, Celsus was correct in demonstrating the church was a new cult, not an ancient faith. Origen responded by pointing out the interconnectedness of the Old and New Testaments, how Jewish followers of Jesus, including Peter and Paul, still followed the literal Mosaic law, and that Gentile believers also followed the law, in a spiritual and allegorical way, in light of the Messiah. The spiritual meaning of the Torah was its true meaning, and only Christians with the revelation of Jesus and the Holy Spirit were able to understand this true meaning. Celsus rejected Christian use of allegory to interpret the Old Testament, but Origen pointed out how if it was acceptable to use allegory to get philosophy out of Homer and the myths, it was just as acceptable for the Bible, if not more so. Celsus had no consistent reason to reject this. Therefore, adding this all up, Christianity was not a novelty, but a most ancient faith, and the rightful continuation of the religion of ancient Israel. Celsus strongly criticized the Christian doctrine of Satan, or the devil, finding the whole idea quite stupid. The notion that God, or the Son of God, was opposed by a lesser evil spirit was an insult to the dignity of God. The high God could not be opposed by anyone. The idea that the Son of God would allow himself to be killed by the devil was also viewed as dumb by Celsus. What could be more offensive to divinity than that? Celsus admitted that Homer and the other ancient Greek authors spoke of a divine war and an evil serpent in the primordial past, but Christians misunderstood the combat myth with their Satan doctrine. Origen responded in a twofold way. First, Christians inherited the doctrine of Satan from Moses and the prophets of the Old Testament. Furthermore, the Old Testament was far older than even Homer. Even pagan thinkers admitted to the great antiquity of the Jewish scriptures. Hence, Christians could not have misunderstood the Greek version of the combat myth, since their stories predate the Greek ones. Second, Satan, by opposing God, was actually doing something God desired. That is, testing humans to make them choose between right and wrong so they could be purified and fit for the heavenly presence. The devil may think he is defying God, but he is actually an unwitting pawn, unknowingly acting as an instrument in the purification of souls. Celsus also attacked the Judeo-Christian doctrine of resurrection. The doctrine of the resurrection had been a bone of contention between pagans and the church, going back to Paul's visit to the Areopagus in Athens. The material world was utterly inferior in Greek thought, and not worthy to be part of the afterlife, especially the body, which was such a weak and gross entity when compared to the soul. Gnostic Christianity had essentially been born upon caving in to these philosophical demands, and rejected matter as a foul creation of the evil demiurge. But the church could not do such a thing. The resurrection was a central teaching of the apostolic tradition. It was the capstone on salvation and the Christian life. Truly, the doctrine was an area where Christianity and paganism would always be at odds. Being as imbued with Greek philosophy as he was, Origen could not help but see Celsus's point about the apparent crudeness of the resurrection. But Origen could also not bring himself to completely abandon the teaching of the church, no matter how much it embarrassed him. Thus, Origen tried to reach a middle ground, and in so doing sowed the seeds for much later controversy. He emphasized the spiritual aspect of the resurrection over the physical, so much so that it often looks as though he denied its physicality altogether. I do not think he actually did so, but it's easy to see where his critics were coming from. Last but not least, we come to the heart of the debate over God between Celsus and Origen, the incarnation of Jesus Christ. Celsus found it utterly abhorrent that God would demean himself and become human, and that the Logos was born from a mortal woman, especially in such recent time. He also rejected Christian monotheism, saying the worship of Jesus detracted from the worship of the high God. In response, Origen declared that only by becoming human could the Logos perfectly reveal the Father to humanity. Humans were so tied to the flesh that only the incarnation of God could bring about true revelation and salvation. The Logos has always existed with the Father, but united himself to flesh from the Virgin Mary. Jesus' birth came at the perfect time, as Augustus Caesar had brought all the nations of the earth under Roman rule, making way for the spread of the gospel. Christians were monotheists. Because of the two divine hypostases, God was honored through the worship of his Logos, and the two were inseparable. When it came down to it, Celsus believed the incarnation was unworthy of God, and Origen did not. Such disagreement was ultimately unresolvable. If Contra Celsum demonstrated anything, it showed that there were real, irreconcilable differences between the church and paganism. Teachings such as the incarnation, the resurrection, exclusive monotheism, creation out of nothing, and the Christian concern for the poor were unacceptable to educated pagan philosophers. Despite all the bridges that could be made on the back of Plato, Greek and biblical thought would never fully see eye to eye. This has been a mere sampling of Origen's arguments against Celsus. If you want more, I have placed links on the blog site to where you can access full translations of the Contra Celsum. Now we near the end of our discussion of Origen. We have devoted more time to him than any other Christian figure since the Apostle Paul. The reason for this is twofold. First is the historical record. Because of Eusebius and others, we have much more information about Origen than most anti-Nicene Christians. Second is the importance of Origen's legacy, which is what I want to focus on now. The great scholar's legacy is influential, multifaceted, and controversial. We will come back to Origen again and again and see how both his admirers and critics interpreted his ideas. Controversy over Origen centers around four major areas: the pre-existence of souls, universal salvation, the resurrection, and the Trinity, specifically the relationship between the Father and Son. We discussed Origen's doctrine of the pre-existence of souls before, but I'll quickly recap. Origen taught that all human souls and angelic souls, or in Greek, nous, referring to the spiritual reality of the mind, pre-existed creation. Then the fall into sin occurred, and as a result, man fell into materiality, acquiring physical bodies and living on Earth. As you can imagine, this was the most controversial teaching of Origins. It diverged radically from the Genesis account, requiring extreme use of allegory to justify exegetically. It also implied that the body, the earth, and even marriage were not part of God's original good creation, but results of the fall, and thus somehow wrong or sinful. Origen had, it seemed, capitulated to Gnosticism by essentially agreeing that the material world was highly inferior at best. This doctrine also informed Origen's Christology. Where did the human soul of Christ come from? Jesus was God, but also man, so he had a soul. Origen believed Christ's soul was pre-existent, but did not fall. This, too, would eventually be declared heretical. The next controversial Originist doctrine was apokatastasis, or universal salvation. Origen did not believe Satan would be saved because the devil chose to reject God, not that he was damned by his nature. This much is certain. But did Origen also teach all humans and even demons would be saved? Well, maybe. His doctrine of the pre-existence of souls lended itself towards a total restoration. Just as all souls existed with God in harmony in the beginning, so they would all return at the end. As far as demons were concerned, Origen seems to have approved the notion that they too were doomed like Satan on account of their free will. But there is evidence that Origen believed that in the end, even after death, God would win over all humans. How exactly this worked out and still did not compromise man's free will is not clear. As we noted earlier, Origen was somewhat embarrassed by the biblical doctrine of resurrection and went to great spiritualizing lengths when harmonizing it with Greek thought. But for all that, did the great scholar actually deny a physical body in the eschaton? Probably not. He did believe that some kind of change in the body occurred that made it different and spiritual. Hence, his doctrine appears to be in line with Orthodox belief. It was later admirers of his that read his spiritualizing language in isolation and took it too far. Last but not least, we come to Origen's Trinitarianism. Specifically, did he teach that the Son was an ontologically subordinate, lesser being to the Father? It would not be until the 4th century when the Church will define exactly how it describes the Son's relationship to the Father. So, in regards to Origen's Trinitarian theology, he needs to be judged within the context of the 3rd century Church. Origen held that Christ was eternally born or begotten of the Father, eternal generation, which was to eventually prove a cornerstone of Orthodoxy. This idea was not unique to him, but he was the first post-apostolic writer to give it focus. But his Platonism also led to a sharp distinction between the Father and Son. Taken too far, and Jesus became a lesser being separate from the Father. The various tensions within Catholic Trinitarianism did not start with Origen. As the century continues, we will see a major clash of two heresies, tritheism and modalism, which will force many church fathers to think even more about how to simultaneously express the distinction of the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, the Logos as eternal generation, and the unity of God as one deity. For Origen, the Son was eternally derived from the Father, and so was second, echoing Justin Martyr. Was this subordinationism? I think a charitable reading of Origen, with historical perspective, can allow him to be orthodox on this point. Perhaps most telling is that when Origen and Origenism were condemned in the 6th century, it was not for subordinationism. Origen was a great biblical scholar. His condemnation and subsequent destruction of his works has earned him much sympathy from modern scholars, many of whom seem inclined towards the "everyone condemned as a heretic was done so unfairly" school of thought. Thus, many modern scholars have made great attempts to completely rehabilitate Origen and refute his ancient enemies. Other modern theologians have done the opposite, finding Origen's errors egregious in their effect on the early church, especially allegory, which they view as a wrong way to read the Bible, in contrast with historical grammatical exegesis. I am personally not swayed by either side. On account of the resurrection and the Trinity, I think Origen is wrongfully accused of heresy. On account of the preexistence of souls and universal salvation, though, I think his critics have a fair point. Despite all the controversy, Origen influenced the early church in many other ways. His biblical scholarship and use of allegory became standard in Christian interpretation, even if many reacted against it. Perhaps most of all, his devotion to the spiritual and ascetic life centered on prayer set a powerful example of how a Christian could live the philosophic life. His writings on prayer would become some of his most admired works for later generations of believers. Origen was an utterly unique individual in the early church. If I were to compose a list of the top five most influential early Christians, he would be on that list. His biblical scholarship, philosophy, and theology became widespread influences on Christianity across the ancient world, for good or for ill, far more than he could have ever imagined. Whatever else may be said of him, Origen was a man of the church and sincerely strove with every fiber of his being to teach other believers how to grow ever closer to God. With that, we shall leave Origen. His death will be discussed briefly in a near episode, but our account of his story ends here. In a few short years, both Origen and many other Christian leaders will die in the first empire-wide persecution of the church, leaving the leadership of Christianity to a new group of men. Next episode, we will fully introduce the two bishops who will stand as the principal leaders of the church for the next dark and troublesome decade. Thank you for listening. If you have questions or feedback about the podcast, you can email me at historyoftheearlychurch@gmail.com. Please don't forget to leave a review on iTunes, post a comment on the Facebook page, facebook.com/earlychurchpodcast, and don't forget to visit the website at historyoftheearlychurch.wordpress.com.